From now until 6 o'clock, we will bring you drama and literature,
poetry and commentary,
readings and interviews,
old radio, science fiction, and new consciousness programs.
And here is your host,
faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's
Roy of Hollywood.
Good morning, good evening, and good day. This is your host, producer, and engineer, Roy of Hollywood, welcoming you again to Something's Happening. And we'll be here until 6 a.m. with Dynamite Radio for Night People. I am particularly nervous and excited, I guess mostly excited about tonight, about right now, as a matter of fact. And next week, celebrating the 25th year of this program being on the air. It's over 30,000 hours. So I'm excited about the upcoming conversation I'm going to have with Carol Spooner. So most of you have never heard of Carol Spooner, but as far as the amazing story of the battle for Pacifica over the last 7 years or 10 years, depending on when you joined it, Carol Spooner is one of the frontline true heroes of what's been going on, and in one of the heroes of the liberation of Pacifica. She did some of the really, really, really hard work, consisting of spending a jillion hours in rooms full of lawyers, some of them not very above board, wheeling and dealing and legalizing and all that stuff going on. And she started out as a listener and a grandmother to KPFA, and now she's a lawyer and she's the secretary of the National Board. It's quite an amazing story. And by the way, she will be appearing tonight with Helen Caldicott, speaking on A Passion for Peace and Survival, Free Speech in Dangerous Times. And Helen Caldicott, Carol Spooner, tonight at the University Synagogue at 8 p.m. And the University Synagogue at 11960 Sunset Boulevard at Saltaire. And the admission for the Caldicott Spooner presentation, $15. And the funds will be divided between Public Media Initiative to help pay legal bills for the successful battle to free Pacifica, and Dr. Caldicott's new organization, the Institute for Common Sense in the Nuclear Age. And, of course, Dr. Caldicott, another great woman on the planet, fighting for decades against nuclear power and nuclear war. So, here is her premier appearance on KPFK, Carol Spooner.
Hi, Roy.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thank you. I just celebrate a couple of weeks ago. A few weeks ago, I would have been fired, or probably I would have been taken off the air right away for talking to you on the radio.
Well, my goodness. I guess that's an honor.
I think so. I would like to... Oh, first, so some staff are very angry at you, so I'd like to ask this question right away before we get to the whole story, because they have to get to sleep, and you are challenged. So a couple of people are angry that you're here raising money for the legal fund.
Mm-hmm.
You used to head the committee to remove the Pacifica board up in Northern California.
That's right. Actually, that was national organization. We had contributors and backers from all across the country, all five Pacifica stations, and throughout the land.
Thousands, and right?
Over 10,000, including people from Europe and South America. I think all continents except no one from Africa. So there are people all over the world who were very concerned and have been for a long time about the direction that Pacifica had been taking over the past decade or so.
So what was the meaning of your suit? Weren't you just attacking our institution here and making things hard for us and causing us, and this is in quotes, to pay legal expenses to defend ourselves against this? What I'd read and heard was that this is just a small group of disgruntled ex-programmers and wannabes.
Well, no, I don't think that describes it very well. The lawsuit actually was brought by listeners and by the California State Attorney General, who has the oversight responsibility for nonprofit public benefit corporations incorporated in California. Pacifica is a California nonprofit and has been for over 50 years. And our claim was that Pacifica, the board of directors of the Pacifica Foundation, had diverted Pacifica from its founding purposes, and were now raising money and using the air in large measure, and at some of the stations almost entirely, no longer for the purposes that Pacifica was founded to serve.
You're talking really about our Texas station, KPFT, which became the Sounds of Texas, mostly
right.
Guitar music.
Country Western, yeah.
Country Western. And then WPFW, our station in Washington, D.C. Both of these had been financial nightmares and became financial success stories. But Washington became a jazz station. We have a station in Washington that played mostly jazz.
That's right.
The only jazz station there, I understand. So that aspect is important, but not 90%.
Well, they virtually eliminated all of the news and public affairs, critical political analysis type programming from both of those stations. In our nation's capital, that's a disgrace for Pacifica to have not even a local news program. But those two stations were certainly outstanding examples of the direction that Pacifica was heading.
They were held up to be the models.
They were,
of
fact,
where we
were,
are heading.
Exactly. They were represented to the board of directors as the model Pacifica stations, and that the other stations should emulate them. And to varying degrees of success, attempts were made to impose those kinds of formats on the other three stations. KPFK, it's my understanding, and I've never been a KPFK listener. I'm from Northern California. But it's my understanding that a huge number of people of color, programmers of color, have been removed from KPFK over the last 5 or 6 years. And a lot of the...
A number, yeah.
A large number?
A number.
Uh-huh. And at KPFA, we saw the same thing happen around 1995. And then in 1999, the board, through the executive director, determined to shut down and reprogram KPFA and met with resistance.
That's the mother station, by the way, first station, KPFA, where it all started in Berkeley.
Right. So our station and our staff was locked out of the station for 23 days, and KPFA was occupied by armed agents from an organization called IPSA, which bills itself on its website as an international corporate security and intelligence gathering firm. They had full sole possession of KPFA for 23 days in
for
July.
23 days. The only people allowed in the building were the security firm and intelligence firm. Mm-hmm. They did not, I understand, allow the news people to remove their address books and their files.
That's correct.
They did $30,000 of damage to the building.
My understanding was closer to 50.
Hmm. And they were the sole occupants of the building for 23 days. This is the old board that some people are decrying has left us.
That's right. And then
demonstrators were arrested.
That's right.
Complained by...
citizens' arrests. when our... the executive director at that time was a woman named Lynn Chadwick, and the executive office was actually next door to the KPFA building. And when a delegation of local notables, the local Catholic worker, priest from the local church there, and Maudel Charek, who is the grand dame of a wonderful 80-year-old black lady on our Berkeley City Council, went to see Lynn Chadwick to try to persuade her to be reasonable. She cowered in her office and said that she was being attacked by a group of racists. There was quite a drama here in Berkeley in the summer of 99.
But there were shots fired in the Pacifica into the Pacifica office.
Well, there is a story about that, and I have never heard anything that plausibly explains it. Our station manager, Nicole Sawaya, her contract was not renewed on March 30th of 1999, and a lot of people were very disturbed about it, but the shot that was fired the night of March 30th before anyone ever heard that Nicole's contract had not been renewed. So I don't think there was any relationship between that shot and any of the events at KPFA. The most plausible explanation I've heard is, one of the programmers who had a show at night was entering the building at that time. She said that she had filed a restraining order against a domestic partner, and she was her theory that the shot was fired to threaten or frighten her, and she was quite angry that her safety was not taken seriously by anyone. So I don't know. You know, we never did figure out what happened. Police certainly never did. I want to talk a little bit about the money, though.
Okay.
Because it's important for people to understand. I have a little flu, so I'm heavy breathing, and I apologize for it. Let me catch my breath. The Pacifica Foundation, we sued the officers and directors of the foundation, and they have an insurance policy, an officers and directors liability insurance policy, that is obligated to provide them with a legal defense at no expense to the Pacifica Foundation.
Oh, well, that's great. So Pacifica was able to get legal defense at no expense.
Well, they had that available to them. Unfortunately, they decided that they needed additional legal representation. So they had the first law firm that they had involved in the legal defense was a firm out of Oakland that was provided by the legal insurance policy. Several months later, they decided to add another team of lawyers, Epstein, Becker, and Green, which was the law firm of one of the directors at the time. John Murdoch was a director, and he was a partner in that firm. So they hired an additional law firm, which was not covered by their insurance policy. That law firm, however, has not yet been paid. Pacifica has not paid their bills. I've seen the bill. It's around $535,000 outstanding. And then...
This is the anti-union law firm, is it?
Yeah, their claim to fame is they actually specialize in two areas of law, union busting, helping employers maintain a union-free environment, and also representing the healthcare industry, both in lobbying and in...
representing HMOs.
HMOs to help them deny people's claims.
Well, that's a good outfit for a Pacifica board member to be working with, yes.
Well, John Murdoch was a partner in that firm and also a member of the Pacifica Foundation Board of Directors. So they hired his law firm so they could have a second team of lawyers. But interestingly enough, that law firm has never been paid. Then last summer, I think it was July or August, I believe it was August, the then executive director of the Pacifica Foundation fired both of those firms and brought in two new firms, neither of which were covered under the insurance policy. They didn't have the permission of the insurance carrier or the approval for either of these firms, so they were brought in at foundation expense. And they ran up another $1 million in attorney fees. But again, none of those bills have been paid yet. So it's very, very strange situation. We're saying, well, they've spent all of our money on attorney fees, but in fact, they haven't spent any of our money on attorney fees because they haven't paid the attorneys yet. And even if they had, it would have been a squandering and waste of Pacifica's resources to, it was a waste in, of Pacifica's resources to hire these attorneys when they had insurance coverage that should have provided their defense entirely at no expense to the foundation. So, does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that is so very strange is we've assumed that the foundation was run into the red through their attorney's bills, but that's not the case because the attorneys haven't been paid. So we're out of money. They've run through the old board, which just stepped down December 29th, ran through Pacifica's reserves, KPFK's reserves, KPFA's reserves, all the operating money that was being raised on these stations. They ran through all of that money, and we don't know what they've spent it for yet. We have just gotten our new board into place, and we did receive a generous grant to get an accounting firm in for 2 full weeks, and they're trying to figure out where the money went. And we expect to get a report by the end of this month, but we don't know where all the money is gone.
Those books, which should always be open by law,
mm-hmm.
Were closed to us around 10 years ago. And so for many of us, it's been a 10-year and more battle since the secrecy entered the loss of transparency, the secrecy and illegality entered with some of these people.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to get a little into your story because I think it's quite a miraculous story. You're a grandma and you're a listener to KPFA.
40 years of listening to KPFA.
So you're sitting there in your home in Northern California.
I'm on my back patio. It's about 28 degrees. Yeah, I've been a listener to KPFA since I was in high school. And during the KPFA lockout and occupation, I just became incensed. And I said, well, this is a breach of trust. These directors have to be removed. And a lot of people felt likewise. And I formed at that time the Committee to Remove the Pacifica Board. And we began circulating in newspapers and at rallies and publishing in magazines and on the Internet a declaration form that listeners could sign stating that they were listeners and they believed the directors should be removed for breach of trust. And over the next 3 months, we got about 3,000 of those. And that just kind of took off on a grassroots basis. People just, it took off like wildfire. I didn't do it. People just did it spontaneously. And they would mail them back into me. And so I had about 3,000 of them. At that point, I hired a lawyer to file a petition with the California Attorney General for standing to sue to remove the board. As I said, the Attorney General is the state authority with oversight over nonprofits. So it was him, it was the Attorney General that we had to get standing from. And he took his good sweet time about granting us standing, about 10 months from November of 99 through September of 2000, but he did eventually do it. He was concerned enough about what was going on with Pacifica, not only the changes in direction, but also changes in bylaws that had made the board of directors self-selecting. And so he felt that there were significant legal issues that needed to go to court, and he granted us standing. With the support of listeners around the country, those declaration forms kept coming in, and I would send out about weekly updates on the progress of our suit and so forth. Over the period of 2.5 years from July of 99 through right about now, we got over 10,000 of the declaration forms, and people supported us, and we were able to have a wonderful legal team who worked day and night tirelessly for us. And I don't want to give the impression that we did this alone, because there were actually 4 lawsuits in total that were filed. The first one was actually filed by members of the local advisory boards of 4 of the 5 Pacifica stations. And that effort was spearheaded by Dave Adelson, who is the chair of the KPFK local board.
That we'll be hearing from in the next hour.
Yeah. So Dave has been in this battle from the beginning as well. He's just an amazing guy who understood that the bylaws changes that had occurred over the years at Pacifica were illegal, and he spearheaded that lawsuit.
And he was a listener and a volunteer.
Right.
Another, if you don't know who you're broadcasting to.
That's right. And then 2 other lawsuits joined us, brought by dissident members of the board of directors, who were also very concerned about the procedures and undemocratic processes.
As part of the national board suing the rest of the national board for the hijacking.
Right. So eventually all 4 of the lawsuits were consolidated.
That's only 3 that we've enumerated, and I'm still a little fuzzy on what was
before. There was one suit that was brought by 2 directors, and then another suit, which was technically a counter suit, that was brought by 3 more directors. So does that make sense? There were 2 directors' lawsuits.
Right, okay.
One by the members of the LABs and one by the listeners and the California Attorney General. So we had quite a powerful lineup coming from all directions, from the board of directors, from the local boards, from the listeners and the California Attorney General, all saying to the court that there was something very, very much awry and wrong at Pacifica. It was a long, long legal battle. They dragged us up to federal court and back down again, and stalled and used every legal tactic in the book to try to drag it out rather than resolve it.
This was a long battle against overwhelming odds. The hijacking board members had all the chips. They owned. They had titular ownership of the foundation. They had all the money, the purse strings. They had the free, quote, we paid for it, legal help.
Well, they had insurance. I'm still so angry I could spit. Every time I realize that they hired lawyers without their insurance carrier's permission and ran up bills that were not covered by their insurance when they should have just been using their insurance.
For which some people blame you for the legal bills.
Right.
You and Dave Adelson and and others.
Right.
And you became a lawyer during this period, right?
Yeah, well, I was actually, my husband and I were in law school, going to night school, at the time that I got involved in this. So my last 2 years of law school were spent working on this case as well. I did a lot of the legal research involved and actually developed the legal theory that our case was based on, and did a lot of the work on it. So to that extent, was able to save a fair amount of the expense of our suit, but in the end, it was very expensive. Our lawyers had to fly around the country and take depositions and spend countless hours near the end preparing for trial, because we had a trial date of January 7th of this year. And the suit was not settled until, I think it was December 12th or 17th or something like that. So we were at the 11th hour working around the clock preparing for trial at the time that we were able finally to settle the cases.
And then, well, of course, KPFA is ahead of us in this evolution. KPFA has already had elections of the local board members, and you were elected to the local board.
That's right.
And the local board elected you to the national board.
That's right.
And the national board appointed you secretary.
The national board elected me secretary.
Elected you, okay.
Yeah, part of the settlement of the lawsuits was the formation of an interim board of directors to take corrective action to get the stations back on track revise the bylaws over the period of the next year to provide for elected local boards to be elected by the listeners and the staff members, and then to also provide for elected board of directors. Your listeners may not know, but for many years, the directors of the Pacifica Foundation were elected by the local boards, and then the bylaws were illegally changed in 1997 to eliminate the rights and powers of the local boards to elect the board, the national board of directors.
And so that was an illegal move.
Right, it was illegal. Under California nonprofit law, if somebody has the right to vote for the election of a director, those rights cannot be taken away from them without their vote of approval. So the bylaws amendments of 1997 that strips the local boards of their right to elect directors were never put to the local boards for their vote of approval. And that was actually the foundation of the local advisory board lawsuit, was that they had been stripped of their rights illegally. So anyway, the board of directors was illegally made a self-selecting body, so nobody could get in there and throw the bums out when they started doing destructive things. So part of our settlement was that the bylaws would be rewritten to provide for an elected board again, and the exact number and manner of those elections to be determined over the next year by this interim board with the approval of at least 3 out of 5 of the local boards. So we have an interim board with a 15-month tenure. The local boards will be elected in 12 months, and a new board of directors will be elected in 15 months.
So a lot more work to do. So you do a lot of work, and you create a lot more work.
Yeah.
And by the way, we now have beginning today, well, Monday, I might say beginning Friday, KPFK here has a new interim manager named Stephen Starr.
Yeah.
And he's our interim manager. He's going to be here for 3 months max. He assures us he's going to have to leave by then.
Mm-hmm.
And he is basically from the L.A. Independent Media Center, a background in film and media. He did some radio in high school, and he was a college DJ. But he has done a lot of media work in film and internet, and been working for years on creating communications, which would be inviolable from interference by corporations and governments.
Yeah, my understanding, he's been involved with a very interesting project called FreeNet, and also the Indy Media Center there in Los Angeles that began during the Democratic National Convention. So he's very interested in free and democratic media, has background there.
Well, I'll tell you, when it looked like Pacifica was going to become NPR-ized, some of us were looking at, you know, where do the independent voices go? And the internet was one place being developing, and the Independent Media Center was another place.
Yeah.
And, of course, micro radio, but that was quashed.
Yeah, the FCC put the kibosh on that one.
But we don't have to worry, because we still have Pacifica Radio as a free speech
Free speech radio.
Free speech radio. I don't mean to be unfair, but I want a theory. We've been tossing various people with various theories. Do you have any feelings of whether this was a government, national security flying wedge, as Peter Frank called it, from Washington to take over and quash Pacifica, whether this was just some well-meaning but, say, artless people who were sold, took the commercial values and brought them to Pacifica thinking it was an improvement, or was it just greed heads who wanted to get in there and grab the money, sell stations, and grab money and run? The hell with you.
Well, I don't think that we can. It was simplistic in any way. I think it was a combination of all of those factors. But underlying it all, I think we need to see what happened to Pacifica in context. Certain factions of the think tanks that decide what to do in this country realized that after the Vietnam War that they needed to get control of the media. And we've seen in the commercial world the merger of the media to the point where there are approximately, I believe at this point, 5 corporations who own them all. But in the public broadcasting arena, the same pressures have been brought to bear. And they've been brought to bear through the FCC and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which have, over the years, changed the rules. If you notice, your local NPR station didn't used to have anything that you would have considered an advertisement. At this point, they do. And most of the programming, at the end of it, you will hear an underwriter's statement. They're underwritten by somebody that you don't like. So public broadcasting has, over the last 20 years, become dependent on corporate underwriting, and that has a major influence on the content of the programming. In addition, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is funded by Congress, was threatened to be defunded in the early part of this decade. And Pacifica was used as the basis for the rationale for defunding the CPB. Pacifica was decried in the halls of Congress as hate radio. And this caused a lot of consternation, both at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and at Pacifica itself. And I am certain that Pacifica officials at that time put their heads together with the CPB to come up with a way to save them both from this awful fate of losing their federal money. Two prior Pacifica executive directors, Pat Scott and Lynn Chadwick, joined the Corporation for Public Broadcasting committee that rewrote the rules for eligibility for CPB grants and changed it significantly, with the effect that community radio stations needed to raise more money and get higher commercial Arbitron ratings in order to qualify for CPB grants, which drove them into doing more mainstream programming.
And that was in order to that CPB money. Corporation for Public Broadcasting is about 12.5%, 12%, and all of a sudden, in order to qualify for that, you had to have a certain amount of listenership or money. And if
it's
you couldn't get the listenership, you could get money, large grants from corporations, which would give you enough money to qualify.
Right.
So that would sort of drive people to take corporate grants. If something's happening, brought to you by Glaxo Welcome.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And Mobil Oil.
Yeah, and this whole theory of public broadcasting was actually developed in the late 80s under a pilot project of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting called the Healthy Stations Project. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Oh, yes.
Well, one of Pacifica's...
Kick out the volunteers and
right,
the professionals.
Kick out the volunteers, professionalize, get rid of all that quirky stuff, go to strip programming.
You are listening to KVLK Los Angeles.
Yeah, go and base your format on strip programming, niche music, light, not particularly challenging chatter, and syndicated programming from NPR and or Public Radio International, PRI. That was the formula. Was originally called the Blueprint Project, but they realized that wasn't all that attractive as a name, so they changed it to the Healthy Stations Project. And that was founded by one of Pacifica's former executive directors, Lynn Chadwick, and her husband, David LePage, were involved in doing that before Lynn came to Pacifica. So that was the model being touted around the country to transform public broadcasting into something that was much more easily manageable and controllable.
And, of course, we point again to the model Pacifica stations, the two smallest ones, KPFT, and, which became cowboy music mostly, and WPFW, which became mostly jazz.
That's right.
And both increased their listenership and their finances quite spectacularly, or so I hear.
Well, so I hear, too. I've never seen that absolutely proven, but we could take that as at least possible that they did grow their listenership and raise more money and become more financially stable, which is a very attractive package, I think. But it's not...
The money is attractive, you know. I mean, we do owe it to the listeners to not be poverty-stricken and to not have the transmitter going out all the time and to have decent equipment and and not to be begging out of emergency necessity. That is a part of our responsibility to have a financial stability. But
I agree. And I think that there certainly were problems and have always been... Pacifica has always been... underfunded and begging for money, and new ways of dealing with that perhaps did need to be looked at, but abandoning Pacifica's mission should never have been in the mix or under discussion. But you asked me, why did I think this happened?
It would be changing the mission, not abandoning it. They just would change it, which is what they were empowering themselves to do, actually, to change it.
You can't do that. If you form a nonprofit, you have to file articles of incorporation with the state saying what the purpose of your organization is. And you can't then change that to be something else. It's illegal. Your local chapter of the Red Cross can't suddenly decide to be the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
The double cross, right?
Yeah. So anyway, I do think that there was an underlying political environment that was intent upon transforming public radio and getting control of it and bringing its content under control. And
control.
I think there's a lot of circumstantial evidence for that. And there's also, all we need to do is look at who are the two most powerful people in public radio today in this country. And it will send chills up and down your spine. They are the chief executive officer of the CPB is a guy named Robert Coonrod, and the CEO of NPR, National Public Radio, is a man named Kevin Close. And these two men have virtually identical resumes as former Voice of America executives. Kevin Close was head of the Voice of America operations in Eastern Europe, and Bob Coonrod was the head of Voice of America operations in Cuba through radio and TV, Marti. These are overseas propagandists who, at the end of the Cold War, they downsized the Voice of America, and they came on shore and came into public radio with, I'm certain, the goal of reaching into and forming the opinions of the, quote, intelligentsia in America. So I think there is there definitely was a political motive. Pacifica has a mission. It is to bring news and information concerning the causes of conflict between people of all races, creeds, colors, and nations. News and information not commonly available elsewhere to the radio audience. And that's not something that these kinds of propagandists and media manipulators want to see. But then, in addition, I think there were financial pressures on Pacifica, and I think there were truly abominable managers who carried out this plan with such a brutish hand that they were able to arouse the indignation of thousands of people across the country. They didn't just do it quietly and in a seemly manner. And then towards the end, I think there was greed that came into it. I think the value of the KPFA license and the WBAI license is very high. Both of those licenses are actually grandfathered in. They're on the commercial band, and they're worth combined about $250 million. So I think there were, I know there was plan to sell those licenses. We have copies of memos from board members talking about it. So,
or as we heard from Dave Adelson, one of the big shot lawyers of the old board, who said, you know, you guys have a $500 million in capital equipment and licenses, and you only bring in $10 million a year. That is no way to run a business.
No, it's underutilized assets.
This is KPFK Los Angeles. We are on the air live as of Monday night, Tuesday morning, the 28th into the 29th of January with Carol Spooner. And how would you like to take a few phone calls? Although I have been assured that when we start talking about this stuff, everybody tunes out.
Oh, okay.
So there may not be any calls. But if you want to challenge or ask Carol Spooner from the committee to remove the Pacifica Board.
Now, have to say the former Pacifica.
Former Pacifica Board, and now a secretary of the new Democratic-oriented Pacifica Board. You can call and 818-985-5735. Carol Spooner will be with Helen Caldicott in Los Angeles tonight. It's Tuesday night, the 29th. Tonight at the University Synagogue at 8 p.m., they will be talking on. Will you be having a discussion or both giving talks?
No, I'm going to give a short talk, and then Helen is going to give a longer talk. It's very inspirational. You know, if we.
She is very inspirational. The telephones are jammed.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's tonight at 8 o'clock at the University Synagogue, 11960 Sunset Boulevard. That's west of the 405 freeway at Saltaire. It's $15 to get in, and you can get advance tickets at Dutton's in Brentwood, Book Soup in West Hollywood, or the Midnight Special in Santa Monica. For more information, 323-930-2870. Information 323-930-2870, or you can email davidvgoliath@aol.com. davidvgoliath@aol.com. I've got to get to some of these calls because this is amazing. Hello, you're on the air with Carol Spooner.
Hi, Carol. This is Jim Balter, and I'd like to thank you for all of the work that you've done. And I'm just wondering, I'm continuing to get emails from Mark Cooper, who on the one hand says that Leslie and Dan are reaching out their hand to him to stay on the air. On the other hand, he's attacking them for doing political purges and emulating the old board and being responsible for the financial situation, et cetera, et cetera. How is this going to be resolved?
Well, I'm not aware. I have not seen Mark Cooper's latest email messages. He's certainly mistaken about the current board being responsible for the financial mess. That was the work of the old board.
Well, his claim is that the board is responsible for bringing the lawsuits.
Well, I think, as I've explained, the lawsuits are not the reason the Pacifica's broke, because the lawyers haven't been paid yet. We don't know where the money is gone. That's why we have an accounting firm in there right now, digging into the books to figure out where the money's gone. But it hasn't gone to the lawyers because they haven't been paid. So that's some erroneous information that Mr. Cooper has. What was the other thing you asked?
I'm sorry. He's talking about claiming that Leslie and Dan are making a political purge by removing Mark Shubb. And also this afternoon, Susie Weisman on her show gave a long spiel about all the wonderful qualities of Mark Shubb, and then she quoted Victor Serge about how we have to examine our own points of view and make sure we have communication and all that, which seems like it applies better to Mr. Shubb than to the board and the new people who she seemed to be aiming that against.
Well, you know, I don't think it's fair for me as a director of the Pacifica Foundation to launch into a discussion of personnel matters and
right,
who
so
the manager
is. Instead of that, I'm just wondering, as a listener, because there's a fund drive coming up and some of these people are going to be, trying to fundraise, I'm just trying to understand how there's going to be a coherent message and how there's going to be some kind of resolution and meeting of minds between these staff who are making these on the one hand, these statements that are quite hostile and
well, I'm hoping that our new interim general manager will be able to get the facts to the staff because they've clearly been misinformed about the source of the financial problems at Pacifica. It's not the lawsuits. It is the former management and the board that exercised no control over the former executive director who's apparently squandered millions of Pacifica's money. That's one of the other reasons why we needed to bring the lawsuits was to get them out and get control of the finances again. I do know that Mark Shubb was negotiating his resignation at the time that he left, and that's about all I can say about that, is that he had already indicated that he did not want to stay on as station manager with the change of direction of Pacifica that's envisioned over the next coming years. And I'm very thrilled that we have available, at least for the short term, an interim general manager who I hope will inform the listeners and the staff as to the true state of affairs at Pacifica.
Hello, you're on the air with Carol Spooner.
Well, hello there, Roy. It's Lindsay, and how are you? Congratulations next week. 25 years?
25 years on the air, yeah.
What day next week?
Well, I just say the first day of February that I'm on the air, because it was the first, it was February 77, the first Monday.
Doing Christian Murdy and stuff that you can't hear anywhere. This station, I'm 51, I was born and raised here. I've met Roy recently and several of the other very unique hosts of really varied shows. And Carol, I got to say thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
And I am curious. I have noticed, for instance, there was a jazz show on 3 in the morning on Saturday nights that has been cut down from every Saturday to once a month with a host of color. And I'm wondering, you know, here in Los Angeles in 2002, and, you know, what is that? Coincidence, or is there anything that we can be vigilant or do, and especially those of us? When this first happened, when it was being announced that the money was gone, and in between each show, a couple weeks ago, whenever it started, and there was a website, and I am at a level where I have not got access nor knowledge for the website, but I'm great at phone calling and showing up and physical protests. And, I mean, I started with Bay of Pigs. And, you know, I'm more than willing to put my, you know, my mouth or my body where it needs to be and to call the right people to protest. I'm a registered voter, although I don't participate in our banking systems. haven't for many years, intentionally, because I find it very hard to fight what I consider, quoting a man named Craig Hewlett, a consumerism society. Mm-hmm. You know, so I try not to feed into any of the big corporate things and all like that, but I, like I say, I am willing to, the last time they had a pledge drive there, they have a show on, I think it's called Sedacious Beats, as a young Hispanic man that tries to, people in indigenous peoples, music and to appreciate, you know, the various indigenous people even right here.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, it's so varied.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stay with it and you hear, Violet Flower at 6 in the morning. You hear Grateful Dead all night live on Friday night. And then you can hear about great cars and all kind of, you know, stuff that you really honestly cannot find. And from the individual show host point of view, not influenced by corporate money.
Yeah, and that's a precious thing.
It's priceless.
Okay, do you have a question?
Yeah, how do people that don't have access to internet or things like that, how can we, you know, they just have a telephone, maybe, if we're lucky, or a phone, change for a payphone. Some of us are homeless or just becoming unhomeless, whatever. Is there anything else that, you know, old-fashioned protesters can do, just physically speaking or by telephone?
Well, at this point, I really don't think that protest is necessary. It's been the last few years when you weren't hearing about anything over KPFK's air that the battle to take back control of Pacifica took place. We've recently won that battle. And I think that by listening to to KPFK, you will be hearing more information about what has been happening and what we plan to do in the future. You'll be getting reports from the station manager and also from the local advisory board over the air. And we're going to be asking our listeners to support the station completely through this transition and help us rebuild. I do want to say that the program Seditious Beats was recently canceled, as I understand. And many of the inventive and wonderful programs produced by people of color are now gone from KPFK, and we'd like to change that.
Hello, you're on the air with Carol Spooner.
Yes, good morning. I had a question, but first I want to say that there was a lady on with Ian Masters and Fagan Ginger, I think her name is, a professor from San Francisco State.
Know Ann.
She's going to be in town this week, and if any of your tape heads are out there, you can get out and tape it for Roy's show, because she sounds terrific on the Afghan war and all that. Anyway, when can we safely send our money to KPFK and it'll get to KPFK?
Now.
Okay. Thanks.
Creating local control. We are in the process of creating local operating accounts for all the stations.
Roy?
Yes. You're on the air with Carol Spooner.
Oh, great. Well, one thing I was wondering, is there any way you can pot up her voice? Because her phone is a little bit tough to hear. And
I'll try.
I appreciate it. I wanted to mention, I know this is like a little bit down the road, but, you know, there was an application for a San Diego translator antenna made something like 6 years ago, about the same time that the application for the Santa Barbara translator was put in. The Santa Barbara came online about 3 years ago, and every time I've inquired, I've just gotten stonewalled, like as if, what am I talking about? And I just wanted to bring it up just so it, you know, keeps that issue alive, and maybe you can research with the FCC if that application did indeed get filed, or, you know, what the status is.
Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of it. So,
thank you.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the air with Carol Spooner.
Hi, Carol. As a listener and a contributor to KPFK, I've got a deep interest in the ongoing life of the station. And when I hear you talk about the fact that the funds have been exhausted at the Pacifica Foundation, and that there are all these liabilities out there in terms of big bills with the law firms, and who knows what else, I'm curious if Pacifica is really facing a financial crisis that would perhaps impact the viability of Pacifica, and I'm wondering what would then happen to little KPFK. Is KPFK also vulnerable if Pacifica were to become insolvent?
Well, that's a very serious question, and I do believe that Pacifica's financial position is grave. As you mentioned, there are large outstanding debts, and the new board will be negotiating and attempting to reduce those debts and also working with Pacifica's insurers to see if we can get some of it covered. But we are in a big financial crisis, and it does impact all of the stations. If Pacifica, for instance, were forced into bankruptcy, that could have serious implications for KPFK. It is important for all of our listeners who believe in free speech radio and this magnificent experiment and believe it's important as ever in these times to help support the stations and help us raise money.
Do you, in fact, anticipate some sort of Save Pacifica drive that would be separate from the local fundraising campaigns?
Yes, that's under serious consideration right now. We're waiting for the results of our audit that's underway right now.
Being done by Anderson, I hope.
No, it's not being done by Anderson. We had the good sense not to hire them.
That sounds like something the old board would have done. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And we are having a fund drive probably around the 13th of February. And we've provided the service. You know, we always talk about you subscribe, we'll turn it into radio programs, and that's what we've done. So all this other hijacking behind the scenes has not affected what we've done here on Something's Happening over the last year or the next year or the last few years, although it's been depressing at times and made it hard to be a creative programmer, but we managed to muddle through. Carol Spooner is going to be appearing in Los Angeles tonight, January 29th, Tuesday night, tonight, at the University Synagogue. She'll be with Helen Caldicott, and the subject is A Passion for Peace and Survival, Free Speech in Dangerous Times. It's going to be University Synagogue, 11960 Sunset Boulevard. It's west of the San Diego Freeway, as I call it, or the 405, as the foreigners call it, at Saltaire. So Sunset and Saltaire, $15 admission, and the advance tickets can be bought at Dutton's in Brentwood, Book Soup in West Hollywood, and the Midnight Special in Santa Monica. For more information, of course, KPFK Switchboard has that information, and also somethingshappening.com, no apostrophes. And you can get information on the phone at 323-930-2870. 323-930-2870. Or you can email davidvgoliath@aol.com. davidvgoliath@aol.com. Well, Carol Spooner, it's been a privilege to talk to you. You've been an incredibly important figure in the life of Pacifica, and I feel such a overwhelming personal debt to you for the work you've done and that we've done over the last years and what you've helped to accomplish in liberating this experiment that I've devoted the last 30 years of my life to. I owe you a great debt.
Well, you know, it is a precious thing, and it is worth fighting for. And it's been listeners across the country and also people like you who've made it possible for us to come this far. Now we need to rebuild.
Rebuild.
Yeah.
Thank you, and good night, Carol Spooner.
Thank you.
That's Carol Spooner, formerly of the Committee to Remove the Pacifica Board, now the Secretary of Pacifica Board. And you're listening to Something's Happening on KPFK Los Angeles, featuring Dynamite Radio for Night People, Monday through Thursday night, midnight to 6 a.m.